Hi, this is Andrew Beatty, co-CEO of Beatta, a blockchain-based music streaming fraud detection company. You're listening to Your Morning Coffee, the podcast with my friends Jay Gilbert and Mike Etchert. Weekly music news for the music business.
From Billboard, with label layoffs, will artists get dropped?
From Chris Castle at Music Technology Policy, Blake Morgan and hashtag I Respect Music return to Washington for the American Music Fairness Act and hashtag Music Fairness.
And for music business worldwide, so maybe don't bet your house on Universal Music Group and TikTok reaching a deal anytime soon. Well, that's an interesting, provocative title for a story. And we will talk about that and other things on the podcast. We're glad you're here, and we're going to start the show right about now.
Stand by for transmission.
This is London Calling.
Wake up! The revolution is at hand!
Your morning coffee is on the air.
Your morning coffee, the weekly music news for the new music business. It's the highly curated, agitated, advocated, moderated, and liberated digital music information that you need to know. We are your digital music authority. And now, from our studios in Hollywood, California, here's your hosts, Jay Gilbert and Mike Etchart.
Good to see you, my friend. We're doing it a little bit early, and that intro music, really cool. That's the new one by the Black Keys, Beautiful People, Stay High.
Yeah. Wow. Isn't that cool? I had the pleasure of interviewing Dan and Pat from Black Keys for the Behind the Setlist podcast, and what was strange about that is I always do these interviews with Glenn Peoples, you know, our good friend from Billboard. And he had to be on this UMG earnings call. He couldn't make it, and they couldn't reschedule. The show must go on. So I went on, and I did the interview solo. It was horrifying, but it was just such a wonderful conversation. These guys have so much going on right now. They have this documentary that I got to see a screener of that they're going to premiere at South by Southwest, and it's called This Is a Film About the Black Keys, which is great. They have a new album coming out April 5th, and the title is Ohio Players, which
love that.
They're from Akron, Ohio.
They're from Akron, Ohio. And of course, there was a great 70s soul band called the Ohio Players, which I love. And you told me a little quick story, which you have to share.
Because, they didn't have to, but they went ahead and reached out to the Ohio Players camp and said, we're thinking of titling our album. And of course, they loved the idea and they said, that's great. You have our blessing, so on. But you need to listen to this interview because it's really good. So Black Keys, thank you so much. The other thing is our intro today was Andrew Beatty. He's the co-CEO of BeatDap, and I misspoke on one of our podcasts and when we had Morgan Hayduck on, who we think is really super cool. And he's the co-CEO of BeatDap alongside of Andrew Beatty. Anyway, we love BeatDap. They're an industry leader really in combating streaming fraud. And they've become a beast in the industry to sort of help us solve some of those issues. So thank you, Andrew, for the intro.
Thank you, Andrew. Absolutely. And then you mentioned South by Southwest, Jay, and you are, in fact, moderating a panel over there at South by Southwest. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. The panel I'm moderating is called The Evolving Landscape of Record Labels for Artists. And you remember the band Hanson. Taylor Hanson will be on the panel, along with Sherry Saidi from Versewire, Nick Lipman. It's going to be a really, really great panel.
Well, the panel description is as follows. Join us for a dynamic discussion on the rapidly shifting landscape of record labels and its implications for artists. Our diverse panel of industry experts, including independent artists, label executives, and music technology innovators, will delve into the challenges and opportunities presented by the new music industry paradigm. From the impact of streaming services to the evolving nature of artist contracts, we'll explore how artists can navigate and succeed in this transformed environment. Whether you're an aspiring artist, industry professional, or music enthusiast, this panel will provide valuable insights into the future of music production, distribution, and promotion. And my guess is that's going to be a packed house, Jay.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And that's at South by Southwest. That'll be Wednesday, March 13th, 4 o'clock Central Time at the Austin Convention Center, room 17AB, for those that are taking notes. And if you come, come by and say hi. The other thing that we were talking about, which was so amazing this week, I don't know if everybody got a chance to see this, but there's this video that's out, and Hypebot ran a story, and the headline was "Songwriters Mock Low Streaming Royalty Rates in New Video." And they're using that, I don't know if you've seen this, like on TikTok, it's that "of course" format, yes. And one of the tragedies of the streaming age is that even hit songwriters are finding it hard to earn a living in the age of streaming. The rates paid by streaming are already low and often divided by 3 to 6 songwriters, including the artist, even though they contributed nothing to the song. But, you know, we talked about that last week. A group of very successful songwriters decided to express their displeasure using that "of course" format made popular on TikTok.
Yeah, so on that video is Bonnie McKee. She worked with Katy Perry and Britney Spears. She's joined by Jay Hart, who's worked with Cher and Troye Sivan, Taylor Parks, who's worked with Ariana Grande, Panic at the Disco, Autumn Rowe, who's worked with John Batiste, Jax, who's worked with Weezer and Big Freedia, Lauren Christie, who's worked with Dua Lipa and Avril Lavigne, Jesse St. John, who's worked with Lizzo and Camila Cabello, and Michelle Lewis, who's worked with Cher and is the head of the Songwriters of North America and others. And the video begins with, "We're songwriters, of course. You know all the words to the songs we wrote, and you have no idea who we are." And the sad irony of this unfair situation, it builds from there.
So here it is. It's 59 seconds. Check this out.
"We're songwriters. Of course you know all the words to the songs we wrote and have no idea who we are."
"We're songwriters. Of course we have great voices.
We're songwriters. Of course we're salty about UMG because we're the ones that secretly wrote all those songs."
"We're songwriters. Of course we use movie titles as song titles."
"We're songwriters. Of course we're going to show up 30 minutes late with a fresh coffee in our hand."
"We're songwriters. Of course we use baby as filler."
"We're songwriters. Of course we can sing and we have artist projects."
"We're songwriters. Of course we run crazy with baby and world with girl."
"We're songwriters. Of course we work for free."
"I'm a songwriter. Of course I'm a therapist."
"We're songwriters. Of course we have 10,000 songs collecting dust on a hard drive."
"We're songwriters. Of course we're good at artist development. We've been doing for free our whole careers."
"We're songwriters. Of course we don't get points on the master." We're songwriters. Of course we love working for a bitch called Hope.
We're songwriters. Of course we use Rhymezone.
You do. With my crew. Kazoo. Cashew.
We're songwriters. Of course we thought about starting an OnlyFans. Seriously, should I start an OnlyFans?
That is great.
It's hilarious.
I mean, it's sad. It is great.
Sad at the same time.
Yes.
The other thing, just really quickly before we jump into the stories, I want to give a shout out to Mike Warner. He's got this great monthly newsletter called Music Tips and News for Artists. And his newsletter this week, you can find it on LinkedIn. It's the headline was Bandcamp Discover Tool, Spotify times Bands in Town, Tidal Live, Apple Music Favorites, and more. Mike is a friend. I love his work. We talked about his book, Work Hard, Playlist Hard. Highly recommend it. But check out his newsletter, Music Tips and News for Artists, and you can find that on LinkedIn.
Yeah, indeed. So, all right. Well, let's jump into the stories, Jay. The number one story for this episode is from Billboard. Oy, so sad. With label layoffs, will artists get dropped? With leaner staffs, you either need to spread your remaining staff more thinly or serve a smaller roster, one executive says. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, this is we've been there before.
Yeah.
And it sucks. We've got a lot of friends who got laid off. And man, oh, it's just tough times. Hate to hear it and hate to read about it.
Yeah, we absolutely hate to hear about this stuff. And there were a couple of other headlines that I ran in your morning coffee this last week alongside of this one. I thought this was interesting because they actually talked about the artists as well, because when your key person loses their job, the next guy may not be hot on you as an artist, and that can be a problem, and sometimes they don't pick up options. The other couple of headlines I wanted to mention really quickly that were alongside of it was one from Billboard, and the headline was layoffs are underway at Universal Music Group. And then the second one, this was from Variety, Atlantic Music Group announces 24 layoffs in effort to, quote, achieve maximum impact for artists, end quote.
Right. So the first Billboard article we're talking about, it says in January of 1999, Universal Music Group laid off hundreds of employees during a wave of consolidation with PolyGram. The biggest staff cuts were at Geffen and A&M, two Los Angeles-based labels that had been folded into Interscope Records, and at Island Records, which has been merged with Mercury, Billboard reported back at the time, predicting that the cuts would affect label rosters, with baby bands expected to suffer the most casualties in the shakeups. In an interview with the New York Times, one artist manager described the impact of the merger on his band as if a car got shut off in mid-gear. And that was back in 1999. You were there, and I joined shortly after that, and I remember these stories well.
I do too. So roughly 25 years later, UMG is expected to cut hundreds of jobs to create efficiencies in other areas of the business so we can remain nimble and responsive to the dynamic market, according to a January statement from Universal Music Group. Warner Music Group has announced layoffs as well, more than 800 people in two rounds over the last 12 months. Yeah, on Monday, Warner Music Group labels Atlantic Records announced additional cuts of about 24 employees we just touched on, primarily in the radio and video departments. Sony Music is also expected to trim staff, according to sources, but a rep from Sony declined to comment. So these cuts herald a leaner approach to the major label business, and some talent and their representatives are worried about how this will impact their future.
Sure. Artists are going to be upset, says Mike Begain, who was head of curation for Spotify, then worked at UMG as a global executive VP of music strategy and tactics until last year. He said this: the teams that artists signed up for and have been going to battle with will all be gone. This is going to impact the managers and the remaining label staff who are already spread too thin. If you're not a multi-platinum artist, good luck, said Alan Kovac, a longtime manager who had several acts in the UMG system during the 1999 consolidation.
Yeah, major labels have been consolidating internally for more than two decades. And in 2004, Atlantic Records and Elektra Records, they merged, right, as part of that Warner Music Group shakeup we talked about. That included 1,000 layoffs. Warner began cutting money-losing and underperforming artists from its merged Atlantic Elektra labels roster. And it's preparing to let go as many as half of the label's 170 acts, the Washington Post reported. Later the same year, BMG and Sony Music merged. In each market, tough decisions will have to be made about the senior executive lineup, overall staffing, and artist rosters, according to Billboard.
So while layoffs were typically followed by roster trimming in the past, history can serve only as a limited guide when assessing the latest round of cuts. The environment today seems quite different to that of the late 1970s and early 1980s, the first time the industry experienced serious contraction, or the early 2000s, says Adam White, a former Billboard editor-in-chief who later served as UMG VP of International Communications. During both of those time periods, industry sales slumped significantly and staff cutbacks were widespread. Isn't that in contrast to the current environment, with revenue admittedly not growing at previous double digits rate, but still growing? Nonetheless, with leaner staffs, you either need to spread your remaining staff more thinly or serve a smaller roster, says Peter Sinclair, who worked at UMG for 5 years before founding Beatbread, an artist funding platform, in 2020.
Yeah, some major label executives contend the staffing changes their companies that are making will make them more resources for artists, not less. Warner Music Group CEO Robert Kinsel, for example, told staff that the cost savings from recent cuts would free up money that can be put towards increasing funding behind artists and songwriters. While Atlantic Music Group Chairman CEO Julie Greenwald said that the company would be bringing on new and additional skill sets in social media and content creation to help artists tell their stories. That was in a memo to staff last Wednesday. Lucian Grange wrote, "Our long-term growth strategy, including this organization's redesign, represents a new paradigm for artist support."
However, many acts believe major label staffs are already stretched perilously thin and that layoffs will only exacerbate artists' feelings of being underserved. "Way too many of my clients complain about what the labels aren't doing for them," said Todd Rubenstein, an entertainment attorney. "Even if there is a whole plan they come in with, it's still not getting serviced. I'm not anti-label. I think every single artist we have is on a major label," said Ad Crush Management founder Jonathan Daniel. "But the reason I set up my company the way I did, and Crush has its own marketing and radio promotion staff, is because labels always have too many artists for how many people work there."
Wow. Wow. That said, when employees are laid off or leave to take another job, some artists will lose their internal advocates. And that's what we were talking about a moment ago. Executives believe it's likely that there are acts in the UMG system that won't have their options picked up after the layoffs because no one inside the building will fight to keep them. "Any artist that's more singles-based is more of a risk on your balance sheet," said one A&R executive turned manager. "They want artists that have sticky fan bases that will be there and support them when they don't have a hit."
Nick Stern, another longtime artist manager, is fond of saying there's nothing better than being a top five priority at a major label and nothing worse than being 20 to 50. And while artists who got dropped by a major label in 1999 didn't have many ways to get their music heard around the world, that's not the case in today's digital industry. Song creation, distribution, and marketing are now far more affordable. As the majors' gatekeeping role shrinks, artists have more options, more leverage, more control, and more creative freedom, Sinclair says. "If you're an artist and you get dropped by the majors, I'd recommend you take it for what it is, an opportunity." Well, that is a good way of looking at it. But, you know, I think it's interesting because I was when I was kind of bounced out of the major label scene a while back, you know, I remember talking to people that were still there and it's like, congratulations, you still have a job, but you actually really have two jobs.
That's right.
Now, for people that were still there. So I think, as someone in these articles pointed out, there's so much already where people were spread so thin. So now how does that work? And we don't know the answer to that, but I think, like a lot are saying, it really is sort of treacherous if you're a band kind of on the cusp, right? You're maybe doing okay, but haven't really broken through, and you may be on the outs after that. So
yeah,
it's unfortunate.
And the spin that the executives are putting on this is that this is going to free up money to help us do more things for our artists. And let's just hope that that is the case. The second story this week is near and dear to my heart, and I had a really great conversation I'm going to tell you about in a second. But the story is from Chris Castle, Music Technology Policy. We talk about Chris and that blog a lot. It's snarky, it's fun, it's educational. And the headline, Blake Morgan and hashtag I Respect Music Return to Washington for the American Music Fairness Act and hashtag Music Fairness. So Blake Morgan is... he's just a great guy. He's a flamethrower. He's also a very good singer-songwriter. I happen to like his music very much. It's very right down our wheelhouse, you know, super melodic. But I had a chance to talk to him this week, but I want to set this up. So artist, performer, producer, songwriter, and label owner Blake Morgan founded the hashtag I Respect Music campaign, the most successful grassroots advocacy movement in the U.S. focused on overturning centuries-long injustice that it really gives broadcasters a free ride on the backs of recording artists. Most people don't know that in the United States, the performer doesn't get paid when their song is played on the radio. And whenever I tell somebody that, they're like, no, that's not true. Let's listen in to this conversation with Blake Morgan. He's going to break it all down for us. Blake, it's good to see you.
Good to be here, Jay.
So you were in Washington last week, and I want to hear about your trip, but for those who don't know, talk a little bit about hashtag I Respect Music and the American Music Fairness Act.
Sure. Well, I Respect Music is the campaign I've been, I guess, sort of accidentally at the forefront, like Han Solo, for the last bunch of years. It's a grassroots effort to bring music makers and music lovers together to try to affect some real world change for all of the. Things, all of the issues that musicians face. And the American Music Fairness Act would really address one of those tentpole issues. So many folks still are not aware that here in the United States, artists do not get paid for radio airplay. So the United States, and I can hear your listeners going, wait a minute, what? And we've been talking about this for years, and in fact, for decades. But it's so outrageous that it's difficult for people to even comprehend. I'll say it again. Artists don't get paid for radio airplay here in the United States. And I Respect Music is something, honestly, that's an homage to Aretha Franklin, because she's such a great example of this injustice. Aretha Franklin never got paid one penny for respect being on American radio.
That's crazy.
She did not write the song. Otis Redding wrote the song. Songwriters do get paid in the United States for radio airplay, as we should, not as much as we should, but as we should. But the recording artist does not. And the United States, in fact, is the only democratic country in the world where this is the case. Okay? The only democratic country in the world where this is the case. The only countries that share the United States position on this issue are, ready for it, Iran and North Korea. So we've got Iran, North Korea, and the United States over here, and we've got everybody else over there. It's just embarrassing. It's wrong.
Yeah.
It lacks virtue. And I'll also say, you know, this has always been the case, right? So it's not like this is a new injustice. Right from the beginning of AM, FM radio, artists have never been paid for their work. It's a far-reaching injustice. It's personal for me. My godmother was the late, great Leslie Gore, and I produced her final record. I miss her. She, of course, is best known for her iconic hits, You Don't Own Me and It's My Party, two great songs that she happened not to write. She was an accomplished Academy Award nominated songwriter in her own right, but she never made any money from It's My Party or You Don't Own Me and all of her other hits being on the radio. And I know how much more music she could have and would have made had she simply been paid fairly like musicians are around the rest of the world.
Yeah. So who opposes this bill? It seems like this should be a no-brainer. This makes perfect sense. What's the opposition?
The opposition is the broadcasters. And their sort of their the tip of their spear is the National Association of Broadcasters. That's their trade organization and lobbying group. And you know, we live in a nuanced, complicated world. It's not always easy to know right from wrong, but sometimes it is easy. And this is one of those cases. And I feel for the National Association of Broadcasters. Someone has to. So I do. And because I understand their position. And the reason that they oppose this is a fundamental and understandable reason, which is they don't want to pay us.
Right.
That's it. That's it. They make $9 to $10 billion a year selling advertising around our music. They're unmoved by the fact that the democratic world does not stand with us. They're unmoved by middle-class, hardworking musicians like myself railing against this injustice for years and years. They're unmoved by what this would do to our economy and help bring all of this money back home, which is something we can talk about, mm-hmm. tax revenue, but also not just for musicians, for everyone who's a part of the music economy. If I was paid for my radio airplay, you know what? I could bring band members on tour with me instead of touring solo 175,000 miles over the last 5 years as I have. So now my band members are getting some of that money. Rental cars are being rented. Hotel rooms are being paid for. You know, the ripples continue on and on. And even if they didn't, it's still just the wrong position to have. So who's opposed to this bill? It's the broadcasters because they don't want to pay. And the last piece of this answer is, remarkably, and even in this polarized political and toxic political environment that we live in, the opposition on Capitol Hill does not line up in a partisan way. Republicans and Democrats support this bill. It's the bipartisan bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who I've found who oppose the bill on Capitol Hill really suffer from one of two things. It isn't party affiliation. They either suffer from ignorance. They don't understand this issue, right? And they're believing the National Association of Broadcaster talking points, number one. Or number two, they're getting money from broadcasters. And so they feel that they can't support this issue because it doesn't help their bottom line when it comes to election time. So it's actually a remarkably simple reason as to who's opposing this, and wonderfully and almost uniquely, who is for it. Music lovers are for it, musicians are for it, and Democrats and Republicans are both for it. So it actually lines up pretty simply.
Is it going to put any small radio stations out of business if they're going to have to pay this?
Okay, so this is the best part of the bill, honestly, and it's the most embarrassing part of our opponent's argument. So musicians love independent radio, small radio, college radio, DIY radio. And those stations and the people who run those stations overwhelmingly and intensely love musicians, right? Nobody wants anyone to go out of business. And this bill protects small stations really like no other version of this bill has in the past. How? Any station that grosses less than $1 million a year will have their payment to artists capped at $500 annually, which comes out to $1.37 a day. $1.37 a day is less than the cost of a Snickers bar. Okay? So what this bill really does legislatively is it says big corporate radio conglomerates must pay their fair share, like everyone else does around the world, to the people who make their only product, musicians. Okay? Small stations, however, are going to get a carve out, right? $1.37 a day is going to be the cap for any station that grosses less than $1 million a year. How is that not cooperative? How is that not virtuous? And how is that not productive in trying to get this bill passed, right?
Yeah, less than a cup of coffee, right?
Way less than a cup of coffee.
So you know? It's going to have a ripple effect in a very positive way if this happens. Talk about how the passing of this bill would affect payouts in other countries.
Okay, so this is another really important part of this. I'm glad you asked the question. So here in the United States, because we don't pay any artists for radio airplay, as a reaction to this absurd position, the rest of the democratic world is now not paying American artists in their countries. So for example, Adele is a British artist, right? Adele doesn't get paid for radio airplay here in the United States, though she does everywhere else in the world. So now what Great Britain has done is they say, well, if you're not paying Adele in the United States, we're not going to pay Beyonce here in Great Britain. And the rest of the democratic world has joined in on this. So what we're really facing, in no uncertain terms, is a global trade embargo on the United States from the democratic world. Okay, again, Iran, North Korea, not bothered by this. Everybody else bothered by this, right? But what we have is that we have a de facto trade embargo on the United States. And if the American Music Fairness Act was passed, not only would American artists get paid, but British artists, French artists, Argentinian artists, Kazakhstani artists would get paid here in the United States as well. And that global trade embargo would be lifted, not only paying musicians fairly all around the world, but practically, that would also be incredibly beneficial to the American economy. All those tax dollars would come home, dollars that we can pay teachers and firefighters with. You know, this doesn't make sense on a righteous level. It doesn't make sense on a foreign policy level. It doesn't make sense on an economic level. It doesn't make sense on just a stupid versus smart level. It's just one of these ridiculous things that we really need to fix. Yeah. And also, we're all focused on the emergence of AI right now, right? This is something I heard on my trip to DC just last week. Understandably and wonderfully, the music world is up in arms, as everyone in the arts is, mm-hmm. about the emergence of AI. AI, which essentially threatens working artists, because what AI does is it scrapes our work in an effort to re-render it without our permission in a fake way, whereby we don't get paid and the person who has re-rendered it then profits from it. And of course, this is intolerable and everyone understands it is. But you know what AM/FM radio has been doing for 100 years is exactly the same thing. Except they don't re-render our work, they just take it. Where else in our free market economy can your work, can your property, my intellectual property, be taken from me, monetized for billions of dollars without my permission, where I don't get paid? And it's important to note, I don't have the right to tell radio stations not to play my work. They're allowed to take my work without my permission, monetize it where I don't get paid. This is exactly like AI, except it's even worse because my work isn't being re-rendered into something new. It's just my work.
So where can people learn more about what you're doing, learn more about the American Music Fairness Act, hashtag I Respect Music? Where should they go?
You can go to irespectmusic.org. And you can also go to musicfairnessaction.org, which is a new kind of action site, grassroots site that Music First has set up. And each of those, they're very similar, but they're basically all going to have, each of those sites are going to have information about the bill, information about the issue, and steps you can take to join the cause and take some action.
Blake, thanks so much for your time and thanks for your hard work on this. Wishing you all the success in the world.
Thanks, Jay. Anytime.
There's a link in Your Morning Coffee to sign the petition right now that if you think musicians should be paid for radio play, and I can't imagine anybody listening to this podcast does not think that. So let's get some momentum and let's please get this over the finish line.
Yeah, and thank you, Blake, for breaking that down for us. We appreciate it.
Right. So a couple of good news stories. This is from Morgan Enos at the Recording Academy. Nearly $400 million owed to songwriters and publishers after streaming royalty rate determination. And once more digital service providers reports roll in, another $10 to $15 million will be added to the total balance. That says the Mechanical Licensing Collective. And the Recording Academy will always fight for the rights of songwriters and publishers. And now these artists are going to get a historic payout. Thank goodness.
That is good news. The Mechanical Licensing Collective, we call it the MLC, you know, they're referencing the Copyright Royalty Board's Phono Records 3 final decision. And, you know, you and I talk about this stuff all the time. That was back in August. That states that songwriters and publishers songwriters and publishers are entitled to nearly $400 million in additional payouts, according to the MLC, during the Phonorecords 3 blanket licensing period that lasted from 2021 to 2022. Digital service providers like Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, they underpaid rights holders by a little bit over $419 million. That total is derived from $281 million for mechanical royalties and almost $138 million for performance royalties.
However, these DSPs inadvertently overpaid publishers for mechanical royalties during the Phono 3 historical unmatched period, which spanned from 2018 to 2020. The overpayment shaves off $28.8 million from the total. This is a lot of numbers, a lot of big numbers, down around $390 million. The MLC clarified that the amounts are estimated and may change based on clarifying calculations. We are extremely pleased that songwriters and music publishers finally will receive the over $400 million they are owed in mechanical and performance royalties from the 2021 to 2022 period, says NMPA President CEO David Israelite in a statement.
Yeah, he also added, our appellate win upholding the rate increase we achieved in 2018 will finally net music creators and copyright owners the windfall that they should have received years ago. This is encouraging and validating news for songwriters to be paid what they're deserved, added Susan Stewart, Senior Managing Director, Songwriters and Composers Wing. We applaud the MLC for their continued efforts to match these royalties to the appropriate rights holders.
Yeah, so for a full accounting of the adjustments from the individual DSPs, visit the MLC website and keep watching recordingacademy.com for more news on music people's rights. That is some good news. And
yes,
Jay,
sir,
before we get into our third story, what do you say we thank our sponsors? Because, oh my goodness, we couldn't do it without them.
I'm glad you
remember. I always remember. Morning Coffee podcast is brought to you by our friends at Bandzoogle. For over 20 years, Bandzoogle has made it easy to build a stunning website and online store for your music. Now they've added a brand new EPK plan so that musicians can create a professional single-page electronic press kit in minutes. All the features you need to design an EPK are already built in, including fully customizable templates, preset EPK page layouts, music players, images, text bio and video embeds, a gig calendar and press quotes, and access to Bandzoogle's award-winning support team 7 days a week. The new EPK plan starts at just $6.95 a month, and Your Morning Coffee podcast listeners can go over to Bandzoogle.com, try it free for 30 days, then use the promo code MorningCoffeeEPK, that's all one word, to get 10% off the first year of the new EPK plan subscription. That's Bandzoogle.com. Promo code MorningCoffeeEPK when you sign up to the EPK plan.
Yeah, and a special shout out to our friends over at Hypebot. Since 2004, Hypebot has chronicled the new music industry and the trends and technologies that are changing how music is discovered, consumed, marketed, and monetized. Edited daily by founder Bruce Houghton with help from Alana Bonilla, Hypebot and sister blog Music Think Tank are published by live music discovery and marketing platform Bands in Town.
Oh yeah, Bands in Town. Over 80 million live music fans trust Bands in Town to get personalized concert alerts, recommendations, and messages from their favorite artists. It's the number one artist service platform, connecting over 590,000 artists with their super fans. Managers, labels, agencies, and artists access their own dashboard to manage and promote their tour dates across all platforms.
And finally, the Music Business Association. We've got the Music Biz Conference coming up, and that really creates the rooms in which the important conversations that shape the future of the music industry take place. Representing more than 90% of the industry at large, the Music Business Association serves as a connective tissue for the global music business and provides a trusted forum where ideas and collaboration can flourish. Join us for the Music Biz 2024 conference, May 13th through the 16th in Nashville. I'll be moderating a panel with some very smart people. Hope to see you there.
Indeed. Big thanks to Bandzoogle, Hypebot, Bands in Town, and the Music Business Association, and the bon vivant that I get to do this show with every week. He is none other than Jay Gilbert. He's a music industry consultant, a curator of the weekly Your Morning Coffee newsletter, and a former executive with now smaller companies like Universal Music, Sony Music, and Warner Music Groups.
Yeah, and this gentleman sitting across from me, my good friend Mike Etchart, longtime host of Sound and Vision Radio, formerly of SST Records, Warner Music, Capital EMI, and Universal Music Group. And I think this Black Keys documentary that I saw is one of the rare instances where I see a documentary before you do.
Oh, damn it.
It happens.
I hate when you do that. It happens.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day. You know what I'm saying?
You rat bastard. You beat me on that one. That's right. All right. Hey, let's do our third story, Jay. It's from Music Business Worldwide with the most provocative title of any of the stories this week. Yeah. So maybe don't bet your house on Universal Music Group and TikTok reaching a deal anytime soon. Sir Lucian Grange was asked by Guggenheim analyst Michael Morris whether UMG and TikTok were getting closer or further away from a renewed licensing deal that would satisfy UMG's infamous concerns over the current terms being offered by ByteDance.
Yeah, specifically on the subject of TikTok, he said, we're friendly people. You know, my phone is open, unfortunately, 24 hours a day. We hope that we'll be able to find solutions. Lucian Grange said that. Right now, however, those solutions don't look likely to arrive anytime soon.
There must not be free rides for massive global platforms such as TikTok that refuse to meaningfully address issues around AI, platform safety, or pay their fair share for our artists' and songwriters' work, said Grange on the earnings call. He added, let me be clear, free doesn't work for us. We have spent years creating a path to digital monetization for music in every single category.
Yeah, and Michael Nash, their EVP, Chief Digital Officer over there at UMG, he added that with consumption shifts from TikTok to other short-form video platforms like Reels and YouTube Shorts, we believe that we can, in fact, recapture some lost revenue that is no longer being generated for UMG on TikTok with this music coming off the platform.
Added Nash, who ironically I used to work for, keep in mind over half of TikTok's monthly active users already use other short video services. In some markets, that percentage is as high as 70%. These services that monetize engagement for music rights holders at a much higher rate than TikTok. So revenue positive consumer migration for UMG is easily foreseeable.
Yeah, Michael Nash cited a real world example of TikTok being banned in India back in 2020, when the service had about 200 million users in that territory. He said it was the largest market for ByteDance outside of China. But all that engagement, after they were banned and went to other global and local platforms, the adoption of short-form video continued its growth unabated. So we've seen massive, you know, consumer migration away from TikTok. We've seen that before.
What about now, though? With UMG's 3 million recordings having disappeared from TikTok's public library on February 1st and the about 4 million or so songs in Universal's publishing portfolio now also starting to get deleted on TikTok, is the service seeing any negative impact amongst its users?
That's interesting. And as Music Business Worldwide reported last week, TikTok says no. Sources at the company say its user numbers have remained solid since the UMG battle began, with one senior executive saying, we have not lost users since the removal of UMG's catalog. Millions of people are still creating videos and discovering new music every day on TikTok. Sounds like something you'd think they'd say.
Yes, exactly. So UMG sees an uptick, taking a more bullish tone on today's earnings calls. Michael Nash said that in the absence of a deal with TikTok, UMG was now focused on elevating and accelerating our partnerships with YouTube, Meta, Snap, and others who, he said, achieve much greater monetization for Universal. Meta has rolled out dozens of UMG-affiliated campaigns on their platform since February 1st, said Nash, referencing the date that UMG's recordings deal with TikTok actually expired.
Yeah, those Meta campaigns, said Nash, have featured artists such as, you know, Liam Payne, The Weeknd, Noah Kahan, Selena Gomez. He also nodded to a recent major YouTube Shorts-driven multi-format campaign, and that was for UMG artist Carol G, which had really helped Carol's music reach a huge audience of 100 million viewers across the touchpoints of YouTube's platform.
Interesting. So now TikTok responds. So last week, Music Business Worldwide had sent a new statement from a TikTok spokesperson on this matter. It reads, "We are in the process of carrying out Universal Music Group's requirement to remove all songs that have been written or co-written by a songwriter signed to Universal Music Publishing Group based on information they have provided. Their actions not only affect the songwriters and artists that they represent, but now also impact many artists and songwriters not signed to Universal."
Yeah, he continues, "We remain committed to reaching an equitable agreement with Universal Music Group. In the meantime, music lovers can continue to enjoy, discover, and share millions of tracks from artists, songwriters, and labels on TikTok, and we will continue to connect all artists, including those whose music is not currently available on our platform, with their fans."
So yeah, as the headline says up there, don't bet your house on it happening anytime soon. But hey, committed to reaching an equitable agreement, that sounds a little bit promising, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, Jay. It's not feeling super promising at the moment.
Not really.
Oh, I really thought this would be kind of wrapped up fairly quickly.
I did too.
But
I did too.
Yeah, but not so much.
I thought they would come to the table and, you know, they both have a lot to risk because... Yes, Universal Publishing and Universal, you know, on the master side, you know, they need to be compensated fairly and they need to have mm-hmm. things like AI addressed. Their demands don't seem unrealistic to me, but, you know, there needs to be some negotiation here and they need to get to the table and work this out because it's also such a great promotional tool for those artists. And I was having lunch with a friend of mine a couple of days ago who has artists that are being taken down because they co-wrote a song with someone that's on Universal Music Publishing. So it's complicated and we all want this to be resolved. So it's fair on both sides and we continue the promotion of these artists.
Yeah, well, we will continue to kind of watch as this thing develops, and hopefully it will come to a resolution. But
yeah,
I'm not super optimistic as we sit here right now.
No.
Not at all. Anyway, it's time to wrap up the show. So we want to say if you enjoy our show, please tell just one friend. Certainly Jay and I would appreciate that. And we want to thank our sponsors. Big thanks to Bandzoogle, Hypebot, Bands in Town, and the Music Business Association. And of course... big thanks to you, the listener. Jay and I, it is not lost on us. We appreciate all the kind words that we get from everyone
and the fact
that you spend a little bit of time listening to us yammer away. So on that note, we want to say big thanks and have a wonderful week. And we'll be back next time on the Your Morning Coffee Podcast.
You've been listening to Your Morning Coffee, the weekly music news program for the new music business. Join Jay Gilbert and Mike Etchart next time for the digital music news you need to know.